So here is what actually happened to Lisa last week, because it's what happens to almost everyone who tries to start over. Lisa is 3 years out of a marriage that ended quietly and badly. She's doing okay. She has a job she likes, a small apartment that is finally hers, and she is slowly learning what it feels like to want her own life back. But her circle is thin. The friends from her married years mostly drifted toward her ex. The ones from before that? College, the old neighborhood. She hasn't called in so long, it feels like a different lifetime. So last week, right after the last episode, she got her phone out. She thought of Maya, a friend from years ago, a good one, the kind of person who made you feel sharper just by being in the room. And she started typing. "Hey, it's been forever. I've been thinking about you. Would you want to catch up sometime?" She read it back. And then something happened in her chest, a wave of it, warm and awful at the same time. Too needy. Too out of nowhere. Maya has a whole life now. She probably doesn't even think about those years. She'll find this strange. Lisa deleted it and put the phone down. Now, that draft that never sent? That is a jar that's still empty. Because the first thing that goes into a jar is a reach. And the doubt didn't protect Lisa from anything real. It just kept the jar closed. That's what this episode is about. The doubt isn't a warning. It's a wall. And today we're going to walk straight through it. Let's look at what the doubt is actually telling Lisa, because it feels like wisdom and we should take it seriously before we push back on it. The dread says, reaching out will be awkward. It will bother Maya. She'll think Lisa is lonely and a little sad, and that will make Maya want to be careful around her rather than warm toward her. The reach will land wrong. Lisa will look like she needs something, which she does, and that need will push Maya away. That is a very specific story, and it feels true. It feels like experience talking, like the dread has been through enough of life to know how this goes. Here's the thing, though. The dread is working from a bad model of people. The dread assumes Maya is evaluating Lisa. That Maya will open the message, run a quick assessment. Is this person worth my time? And make a call. And make a call. And in that model, showing need is weakness, and weakness is a reason to back away. But that is not how people work. That is not how Maya works, and almost certainly not how anyone on Lisa's list works. When a message arrives out of the blue from someone we used to love spending time with, the thing that happens inside us is not an evaluation. It's a recognition, something warm and a little surprised. Oh, I used to know them well. I wonder how they are. The dread gives people a boardroom where they are actually in a kitchen. It gives them a panel of judges where they are actually just another person who misses their own people too. So the first thing to clear, before anything else, is this. The dread's model of other people is wrong. Not sometimes. Most of the time, almost always, wrong. And here's where something from the books and from the research lines up in a way that should actually change how you feel about this. Researchers who study connection, and there's a whole line of careful work on this, have spent time asking a simple question. When one person reaches out to someone they haven't heard from in a while, how does the person receiving it actually feel? The answer, over and over, is that people feel better than the sender expected, meaningfully better. The person sending feels sure the reach will be awkward, will be a bother, will land a little weird. The person getting it almost always reports something warmer than that, glad to be thought of, touched, even relieved. The gap between those two is real, and it's big. The sender's fear and the receiver's actual experience are not even in the same neighborhood. Why does this keep happening? Because the sender is the only one who knows. The silence on their end was long and strange. The person who got the message doesn't experience it as, wow, it's been 3 years, that's suspicious. They experience it as, oh, she's thinking of me. The silence that loomed huge for Lisa is practically invisible to Maya. This matters for something bigger than one text message. The whole reason a circle thins is that people are frozen on both sides. Lisa is afraid to reach. Maya is afraid to reach. And because each one assumes the other has moved on, both of them stay quiet and both of them go without. The circle doesn't thin because people stop caring. It thins because people stop being brave enough to say so. Now here's where the books do something important, and it's the reason this whole show exists. The easy version of what I just said is, you're just scared, get over it, be brave. And that version is not wrong, but it misses the real thing. Because if it were only about being brave, the people who lost their circles would be the cowards, the weak ones, the shy ones, the small. And that is not who lost their circles. Lisa is not a coward. She raised 2 kids mostly by herself during a marriage that was quietly grinding her down, and she kept showing up. She is not the problem here. The problem is a structure. We built a world where you have to be brave to stay connected. Where the normal shape of adult life, moving, jobs, marriages, years going quiet, works against friendship the way a current works against a swimmer. You don't stop swimming because you're weak. You get worn down because you're always swimming upstream. And the structure works on your head, too. Over time, a long silence starts to feel like evidence. Evidence that the friendship was never that real. That you were only close because you were in the same place. That you are not the kind of person whose company people go out of their way for. The silence becomes a story about you, your worth, your belonging, your place in people's lives, and the longer the silence, the louder the story. That is not your voice. That is a structure talking, a shape that was never designed for what friendship actually needs. When Lisa hears too needy, too late, too strange, that is the structure speaking, not the truth. And you cannot beat a structure with willpower alone. You have to understand it first. And then you change the shape. All right, here's the pushback I want to take seriously, because I've heard it, and it's not small. What if it actually is too late? Not the dread talking, the real thing. Maya's life went a different way. She has a whole new set of people now. She's not frozen across a silence from Lisa. She's just moved on, legitimately, and there isn't anything there to rebuild. That happens. People do grow apart in ways that are real, not just built in. And the books don't pretend otherwise. They're honest about the fact that some friendships had a season and the season ended. So here's the honest answer. You might be right. Maybe Maya has genuinely moved on. Maybe this particular friendship is one that ran its course, and reaching out will get a polite response that goes nowhere. And this is the part that matters. You can't actually know which one it is from the inside of the dread. From inside the dread, every friendship looks over. Every silence looks like evidence of the worst case. The dread doesn't distinguish between genuinely grown apart and both frozen, both waiting. It calls them all hopeless, and it does it loudly, and it does it without checking. The only way to know which one you're actually in is to send the message. And if Maya has genuinely moved on, the most likely outcome is a warm response that quietly doesn't go anywhere, which is not rejection. That is an honest and gentle closing of something real. That's not a wound. That's information. The dread wants to protect you from a small discomfort by making you give up on something that might be very much alive. That is a bad trade. And it's a trade you make every single time you don't send the message. There's another thing going on in Lisa's phone that we haven't named yet, and it's actually the trickier part. On top of the dread about how Maya might receive it, there's a second layer. Lisa doesn't feel like she has much to offer right now. She's not doing great. She doesn't have a job title she's proud of. She doesn't have news worth sharing. No big trip, no new thing she accomplished. She's just a woman in a small apartment trying to pull a life back together, and she doesn't want to show up at Maya's door with all that weight. So the reach feels like it costs more than she has to spend. This one is sneaky because it sounds humble. It sounds like Lisa is being thoughtful, not burdening people, not making her problems someone else's problem, but look at what's actually inside it. It's the same taker economy thinking we met in the last episode, the idea that you have to have something good to offer before you're allowed to show up. That connection is earned by your status, your news, your value in this moment. That's not how a jar works. You don't hold back from putting something in the jar because your something is too small today. A jar takes everything. The hard Tuesday, the I've been thinking of you, the I'm not okay and I thought of you. Those aren't burdens. Those are the drops that fill the jar because they make room for Maya to put something in too. There's a second book in this set, the one about friendship, about what it actually costs and asks of people, and it says this plainly, the reach that costs you something is often worth more than the one that doesn't. Because it says something true. It says, you matter to me more than my pride does. Lisa doesn't need to have something great to offer. She just has to be willing to let Maya matter. Here's the thing that changes everything, and I want you to really hear it. We have been treating the reach out as something Lisa does for herself. She wants her friend back. She wants her circle back. She reaches out to get something. And in that frame, the dread makes sense. It's protecting her from risk, from rejection, from looking needy. But what if the reach out is primarily a gift to Maya? Maya, wherever she is right now, is very probably also thinner in her circle than she used to be. She too has had years where life drifted and friendships got quiet. She too has people she thinks of sometimes, people she wonders about, people she'd be glad to hear from. She, too, might have her own draft messages sitting unsent. When Lisa sends that message, I've been thinking of you, she is not asking for something. She is giving Maya the one thing Maya cannot give herself, the proof that she matters to someone, that someone's thoughts went to her in an ordinary week, and that felt worth saying. That is a gift, a real one. Maybe the most real kind. The kind that doesn't cost you money or time, just the willingness to be a little open. And when you understand that the reach is a gift, not a risk you're taking, not a favor you're asking, the dread starts to sound different. It's no longer protecting you from shame. It's asking you to withhold a gift from someone who might really need it. Let me say that again plainly. Every time Lisa doesn't send the message, she is keeping a gift from Maya. The message Lisa is afraid to send is exactly the message Maya might need most. Going first is not weakness. Going first is the most generous thing one frozen person can do for another. Now I want to stay with the real worry for a moment, because some of you are thinking it, and you're right too. Not everyone is Maya. Some people, when you reach out, will see an opening and walk through it toward their own needs, not yours. Some people will take the warmth you offer and use it to bring their problems to your door. You have people like this in your life. You know who they are. And the question is, if you go first, if you lower the guard and send the message, aren't you just handing those people a way in? Yes, sometimes. That risk is real. But here's what the books say about that, and it's important. The answer is not to stop going first. The answer is to go first differently. And the differently has everything to do with the jar. In the last episode, we talked about how a well hides the takers. When one person pours and everyone else just receives, you can't see who's putting anything back because no one's supposed to. The takers are invisible in that shape. But in a circle, in a jar, everyone fills. the person who only ever reaches in and never drops anything back becomes visible over time. Not dramatically, not in a confrontation, just quietly visible. The jar shows you the pattern, so the answer to what about the takers is not to stay frozen. It's to open a circle small enough to watch, wide enough to matter, and see what the pattern shows you. You can always close a circle that turns out to be one way. You can't ever open one you were too scared to start. So, Lisa got out her phone again. She found the draft, still there in the thread, actually. She hadn't fully deleted it, just pulled back from it. And she read back over the words, "Hey, it's been forever. I've been thinking about you. Would you want to catch up sometime?" She sat with the dread again. It was still there. She didn't fight it or wait for it to go away. She just noticed it was the structure talking, not the truth. And she thought about Maya. Not about what Maya might think of her, but about whether Maya might be doing her own version of this somewhere, phone in hand, draft unsent. And she hit send. She put the phone face up on the counter, not face down, which is what you do when you're hiding from the reply, and she went and made tea. Maya replied 20 minutes later, "One line, I was literally just thinking about you last week. Yes, let's please do this." Now, I'm not telling you this to say it always goes that way. Sometimes the reply is warmer than you expected and a little more cautious than you hoped. Sometimes the reply takes a week. Sometimes it doesn't come, and you find out that silence was its own kind of honest answer. But here is what Lisa knows now that she couldn't know from inside the dread. The message she was afraid to send was the exact one Maya had been waiting for. The jar had been sitting there, empty, between them for 3 years. All it needed was for one of them to drop something in. The doubt was loud. The doubt was also wrong. And the one move that proved it cost less than a minute of her life. All right. Let's bring this back to you now, because Lisa's story is only useful if it does something in your life. I want you to think about three things, and actually sit with each one rather than skipping past. First, who is the Maya in your life right now? Not the whole list, just one person, someone you think of, someone whose number is still in your phone, someone you used to know well, and the drift between you was never a fight, just quiet and slow and longer than you meant it to be. You probably know who that is already. You might have thought of them sometime in the last month. Hold on to that name. Second, what has the dread been saying to you about that person? What specific story has it been running? Too late? Too awkward? They've moved on? You don't have enough to offer? Notice the story. Notice that it is very specific, very certain, and, as we've just been through, almost certainly wrong in ways it cannot see from where it's standing. And third, what does the message look like? What would you say if you let yourself be plain and warm and imperfect? It doesn't have to be good. It doesn't have to explain the silence or justify the gap. It can be 5 words, "I've been thinking of you." That's enough. That's a whole gift, right there. You don't have to be ready. You don't have to feel brave. You just have to be willing to treat one other person the way you'd want to be treated, as someone who's being thought of, who's mattering to another person, is worth a moment of awkward. That's the thing this episode is trying to clear, not the awkwardness itself that stays, at least a little, but the idea that the awkwardness means something. It doesn't. It's just the sound the wall makes when you walk through it. So here's your one thing this week. Not a self-check, not a list of 5, not a journal prompt, one thing, send the message. Find the reach out you've been not sending, the draft in your head, the text you started and pulled back, the friend you've been meaning to call for longer than you want to admit. And this week, send it. Write it plain and imperfect. Let it be 5 words or 50. Let it be awkward. Let it be warm. Don't wait until you have something impressive to say. Don't wait until the silence feels less strange. Don't wait for the right moment, because the right moment is the one where you stop waiting and drop something into the jar. This is not a task you're doing for yourself, though it will help you too. This is a gift you're giving to someone who probably needs to know they matter. Someone who might have their own version of the draft sitting unsent. Someone who, when they see your name come up on their phone, is going to feel something they haven't felt in longer than either of you realized. Go first. Drop something in. That's the whole week, and it's enough. So that's what we're clearing this episode, the wall of doubt that sits between you and the rebuild. Not because the doubt is stupid, it isn't, it just has the wrong model of people. And not because going first is easy, it isn't, it's a little awkward every single time. But because the reach out is a gift, the most available gift most of us have. And the jar between you and the people you care about has been waiting long enough. Next time, we start building for real. The small, specific move that turns a reach into a real thing, and the reason it works on people who don't even know why it's working on them. Watched over, as always, by Daisy. I'll see you there.